The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be healed. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like...
Good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is your host, Gary Heasley, in the studio with Ada Nestor. Ada,
hello.
Welcome.
Happy to be here. It's Friday. It's a beautiful day. We got all that rain out of the way yesterday. Hopefully it'll be a beautiful weekend.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully it helps a little bit with the humidity, which has been a bit much for this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
It is a beautiful day out there. It was nice coming in. So we've got a lot happening today. Now, we did have Liz Harrington scheduled to be on the show, but she had a thing come up, so she's not going to be able to join us today. Hopefully we'll get her back in a couple of weeks, because we always enjoy talking to Liz, but something came up she had to deal with today. So what we're going to do is we'll do the first half hour talking about some of the stuff that Trump did at the UN and some of the just the incredible flood of things happening all the time here in our country now that we've got this Trump term two running hard. And then we're going to have U.S. Rep. Scott Perry come on. Now, Scott was with us a few months ago, and it's always fascinating to get his perspective, because he is, he as a Freedom Caucus member, he's sort of on the cutting edge of what real policy should be. If we could get the rest of the Republican Party to move where he is, I think we'd have a much better situation. That's a challenge, I guess, that we'll always face. Now, we're then going to move to a guy named Peter Connolly. Now, Peter is an Irishman, and if you've been paying attention to Europe for the last, 15 years, you've seen a transition happening there as they've gone through the same kind of invasion that the United States has gone through. And it's changing those countries. And the question that's begun to be asked about Ireland is, can Ireland be saved? And we wanted to hear directly from somebody that is on the ground in Ireland, who is someone who's traveled the world a bit. Now, Peter was a military guy, so he'd been around in different deployments around the world, worked with the UN a couple times. So I think we're going to get some great insight from him on how this happened and where they are today. So we're going to hit Ireland pretty hard and figure out, is that the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, for Europe as a whole? And then we're going to have Darren Gobb come back. Now, Darren was nice enough to be flexible when Liz, just about 10 minutes ago, was no longer available. And what we'll do is we're going to get into a bit of the story about what's going on in Ukraine, why we've had this change. Trump made mention of it earlier this week at the UN. And maybe we'll be able to get Darren to speculate a little bit on why Hegseth, the Secretary of War, has called 800 generals and admirals back to D.C. for a chat. Because I got to think that throughout the Army, throughout the Navy, throughout every branch right now, there must be raw panic among these flag officers who now have been called back to the office, to the principal's office. I don't know what's going on here.
Oh, to be a fly on that wall. My goodness, could I get a journalist pass for the day to cover it? I'm not sure, but... oh, I would love. The panic that many must be experiencing right now is probably profound.
Oh, it's got to be. And I agree with you. It would be really fun to be. Let me just be the waiter. Yeah.
I'll just bring you your water. Give me a press pass. Right. Maybe I'll sit in the back and just take notes with a little pencil silently. Silent as a mouse. I won't say a word.
Oh, yeah. But this has to cause just an incredible amount of upheaval across the military. So it'll be interesting to see what observations Darren has. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the things we covered last night. Now, we had a town hall last night. We had former Representative Kurt Weldon in. And Kurt Weldon was in Congress for about 20 years. He's from Delaware County here in southeast Pennsylvania. And he has spent a huge amount of time in the fire services, that sort of thing. And so he's an expert in things related to fires. And he came in last night and talked us through some of the things that he knew at the time because of the committees that he was on and the foreign nations he was dealing with related to things like where Osama bin Laden was and what we really knew about 9/11 at the time and all the strange things that were happening behind the scenes. It was a fascinating town hall. And then he got into some of the really interesting stories about other things, like dealing with Russia on trade and some of the other geopolitical issues that he was involved in. Libya. Turns out he was, talking to Libya at the time that Obama and Clinton decided to go in and destroy that country and kill Gaddafi, and never really explained why. They never quite came up with an answer.
One of the attendees last night actually reached out to me later last night after the event and said, I had no idea about Gaddafi. I had no idea about Libya. And I said, oh, yeah, like that is something that we were sold a completely separate and false bill of goods on. And our government acted in such a way that it really didn't need to go that way.
No, it didn't.
There was no reason for it. And there were people who did business in Libya, American people who did business in Libya, who traveled there frequently, had no problems. It was a safe country. It was a prosperous nation.
Well, now, hold on. Now, that's a big challenge, or a big transition, rather, from where it was, you know, Lockerbie and all of the things that Gaddafi did. And, of course, you know, we had presidents dropping missiles on his tents and things, killed one of his kids. I think that was Clinton. And so there was a huge amount of tension. But there came a point where Gaddafi sort of, I think, just came to the conclusion, I think it was after he lost his son, that he came to the conclusion that it was not really worth it to go fight the West. So to your point, I was talking to companies who were investing in Libya, and they had really exciting growth plans for what they were going to do going forward. So you're correct. I mean, this nation had become stabilized, and U.S. investors, U.S. corporates were going back in and making investments. And you roll forward, and as I said last night, I remember the moment that there was this picture on the front cover of the Wall Street Journal, or somewhere in the Wall Street Journal, of a French Mirage fighter over Tripoli. And I thought, oh, no, here we go. And sure enough, the French were in there for about 12 seconds, and because they're a NATO partner, then we had to go in. As I recall it, and then we destroyed Libya, and Gaddafi had to get dragged through the streets.
He gave the game away, though, last night. What was Gaddafi trying to do for his people and his country that gets people killed?
Well, and this is what nobody knew. Nobody understood why all of a sudden we were all angry at Gaddafi. And there was no explanation given. Just suddenly he had to be killed. And, of course, the issue was that he had begun organizing African nations to get behind a single currency for Africa that would be backed by gold.
What?
Yeah, that would be a currency that would not be controlled by the United States Federal Reserve Bank.
And we can't have that, can we?
No, it turns out that's probably not a healthy thing to work on.
Nope.
And
no, it ends up being a death sentence for everyone who tries.
It seems to. And then what we found out from Kurt Weldon, which was fascinating, is that Gaddafi offered to surrender.
Yeah.
Or not surrender, but to step down and hand off power to someone else. So he was fully aware of the power that the United States had, and that if that machine was brought to bear, he could be in deep, deep trouble.
And they didn't want him to step down because they wouldn't get the headlines, they wouldn't get the photos, they wouldn't get the images of him being dragged through the streets.
And what's the value of those images?
It makes everyone else second guess, back off. All of those African nations that were working with him to come together and unite under a single currency and back it by gold, they all stepped back. They stopped fighting.
And so when you listen to some of the corporate media, Fox News and some of this, you hear them talk incessantly, not about what's actually happening. They're always talking about what message this sends. Oh, we have to go destroy this city to send this message. We have to bomb these people to send that message. They constantly talk about messaging. It is. Of course, they talk about the tactics, the strategies, the costs, and blood and treasure sometimes. But it's a huge amount of time spent talking about how this geopolitical move sends this message to Russia and that message to China and this message to Venezuela and all that. So they think like that. They think that, you know, if you're going to go destroy a country, what's critically important is what message you're sending, not the actual tactical and strategic change that occurs because. So, yes, they had to have Gaddafi dragged through the streets.
Theater.
It's theater.
And look at what happened to that nation since. I mean, let's look at what we leave behind as the American government. I say we, however, I would have never made these decisions. But yes, we are hated across the world because these things have been done in our name, under our flag, by our government. Look at what was left behind. Look at the remnants of what was a strong society. We have it as a visual representation in Iran, We can see it in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
We can see it in Afghanistan. My gosh. The Afghanistan leaders are upset that Trump's violating the Doha agreement that they made, but they haven't kept their end of the bargain of the Doha agreement either. They don't allow women to go to school anymore in Afghanistan. You're not allowed to leave your house without a male chaperone. The liberals in America would like you to believe that The Handmaid's Tale is right around the corner and it's Trump and all those people like him, conservatives, who are bringing it to their door, when people are actually living that horror story and that experience right now, today, in the world. But we're not allowed to talk about them.
Well, you know, so we go into Tripoli. This country had stabilized, right? We go into Libya. We destroy it. We all know about what happened with Clinton and the embassy and, you know, we lose an ambassador there. But the history of it. So it was in 1805, you know, the song "To the Shores of Tripoli."
Mm-hmm.
It was in 1805 that the Marine Corps went into Tripoli to go to war with the Barbary pirates because they were capturing U.S. citizens and Europeans, mm-hmm. enslaving them and selling them off into Africa. And so part of what was going on with the British back then and the U.S. was ending this slave trade. And what happened after we destroyed Gaddafi and killed him and did all that? What happened again? Oh, we started open-air slave trade again in Tripoli. There's actually a video on YouTube that may still be able to be found where they're talking about selling a human being mm-hmm. in a market in Tripoli. And they say something along the lines of, what am I bid for this man? He's a good digger, meaning he could dig ditches. That was in 2017.
Yeah.
In 1805, we had Marines on the ground fighting this. In 2017, it was reinstated because of what Clinton and Obama did. And then John Kerry, of course, followed up.
Mm-hmm. John Kerry, who's family with the mullahs, so let's not leave that piece of the story out. His daughter married one of the children of the Iranian mullahs. So when we see John Kerry out there in public pushing his views and his ideas, everyone should think twice before believing them and know where they're coming from. It's family first for him.
Could you imagine what would happen if all of our elected officials suddenly became loyal exclusively and solely to the United States?
Oh, what a sea change.
No
that
more
would
dual
be.
Citizens. No more. And it just, you know, I don't care who your daughter's married to in Iran. You're just a U.S. person representing the American people.
It would be unbelievable.
The nation would change. The world would change.
Let's get rid of dual citizenship across the board. I actually think if you want to be an elected member of our government, you should not legally be permitted to be a dual citizen of any nation.
I agree.
And I'm not being particular, and I don't feel this
don't
way about
country.
One country or another.
No.
I mean any country.
Yes.
If you are a dual citizen, you have dual loyalties, period, full stop. I don't know how you could not have dual loyalties with dual citizenship.
No, there's no question to do. And you know, it's this self-dealing and backdoor dealing, and that's how we end up having things where, you know, suddenly we're taking actions that are just absolute national imperatives, and we can't figure out what our interests are, how they're being served. Ukraine being destroyed in this war is somehow in our interest. And hopefully, Darren, you know, we'll talk through
well,
this
Russia
again.
Well, Russia, I mean, if you think about our leadership or the leadership from the last administration, at least, because our leadership currently is putting out very confusing messaging, to say the least, currently.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Russia they want to destroy. I mean, mm-hmm. the Western world wants so they can control the property.
The biggest piece of real estate in any country in the world.
Uh-huh.
Incredible amounts of resources, timber and iron ore and titanium,
mm-hmm.
Great advanced manufacturing. They have really good manufacturing. They're a critical part of our aerospace supply chain for a long time. And 140 million people, they can't tax and they can't trans, I guess. You know, I mean, they can't impose their social agenda on and control. And when you listen to the people who are the globalists behind this death and destruction, they typically talk about the problem with sovereign nations having their own laws and their own borders.
And their own ideas. How, God forbid.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it is about conquering Russia. And it's unfortunate that Ukraine is this victim trapped in the middle. Now, I'm not saying Zelensky's necessarily a victim. I don't think he's a particularly noble person, probably. But,
and Ukraine has some problems.
Oh, Ukraine has some problems.
And they had them before this most recent escalation happened in the last few years.
Ukraine had some great, I mean, it's a very great people, great place It's just tragic what's happened. Yeah. This is tragic. But somehow that serves the interests of a child living in Philadelphia? No, it doesn't. It serves the interest of people that gather in Davos and talk about how we're all supposed to sacrifice Western civilization so they can profit.
But this has been going on for a very long time. We've talked about this a lot. But I actually shared an old article from, I think it was the New York Times, about the junior senator visiting Ukraine to help them set up their level 3 biolab. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everyone's telling me there are no U.S. biolabs in 2022 mm-hmm. when I'm screaming, yes, there are. I lost friends, quote unquote, during that period of time. Mm-hmm. But I had just known it. Coincidentally, we had stumbled upon that information in 2020, and I also had remembered it. I remembered that article from the junior senator because he was just about getting wild in there into the rise of his career into the presidency. Mm-hmm. So people were paying attention to what he was doing. And, you know, it's so funny to be told that you're wrong about something that you remember clearly and that you can document, that you can show evidence for. But that was where we were. These are the things that our government has been using other countries to act as proxy to are horrific and numerous. Mm-hmm. It's an endless list.
It is. It really is an endless list. And, you know, so you think about how this new Trump administration comes in the second time. Now, in the first Trump administration, he was really quite effective in global affairs. Mm-hmm. I mean, really quite effective.
So effective, they needed to unleash a pandemic to stop him.
Right.
Whatever. I'll leave that alone for another day.
Yeah, it's for those that are listening live stream, our internet just went down at the station.
Oh.
And so I could see the station's computers offline, our system's offline. And so you got to revert back to listening on the radio. You know, the
we'll
vagaries
get the videos up later.
Yeah, we'll get the videos up.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, the short of it is that Trump goes to the UN this week and holds these series of speeches that are incredible. I mean, just incredible.
After they cut off his escalator, and he was only given 15 minutes to do a speech, by the way, that was his allotted time. So they cut off his escalator as him and his wife, Melania, are going up it. And she's in heels, by the way. They're very lucky. Everyone's very lucky that she didn't hurt herself there.
Yeah.
And they gave him 15 minutes to do a speech. He wrote a 15-minute speech. They cut off his teleprompter. So he took 55.
Yeah.
And I loved every minute of
it. That was great.
I mean, every minute.
This guy gives a 55-minute speech and covers so many things.
Oh, yeah. You know, to their faces.
Yeah. He hit the seven wars that he stopped, yep. Right? Unendable wars. Mm-hmm. Now, one of them, people in the U.S. didn't even know was on. This war on in Thailand and Cambodia, nobody even knew was happening.
Yeah.
He got involved in all these things. And just by bringing some leadership to the table, and of course having the influence of the United States, he was able to bring these things to a close. Help, and I said a couple of weeks ago that as I was coming down to the studio, I was listening to chants by monks in Cambodia who were chanting about Trump and him bringing peace. Remember that?
Yeah,
it was pretty incredible.
Yeah,
they didn't chant about Biden. They didn't chant about any of the Bushes. Nobody got chants.
Oh, speaking of Biden. Did you see the Presidential Walk of Fame on the White House porch, balcony? What? No, it's the porch. It's
yes.
The colonnade.
That was real?
Mm-hmm.
I saw that.
Yep.
And I saw how it was all flat and then it began to step up. And then they put the picture of?
It was the auto pen. Listen, guys, I added music to it. If you want to go to my Twitter or my Instagram, Ada Nestor WC, share the video. It's beautiful. It's a hilarious thing. Every president is shown except for Joe Biden. And for Joe Biden, it's the auto pen.
That's right. So that was pretty interesting. So he goes and he talks about all of these issues, the peace. He talks about the leadership of the United States. He talks about how China and India are the primary founders of the Russia and Ukraine war. And although he's leaving out of that, of course, the NATO role. You know, mm-hmm. these European countries that scrounged up some money to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. And then he hit prisons, that the prisons in Germany are filled with asylum seekers. You know, people that came there presumably for help and then and then, you know, came back, responded by giving them crime mm-hmm. instead of being good citizens. And then this whole concept the globalists have that the United States and Western civilization have to be fundamentally destroyed because we're all terrified of CO2, which is preposterous. And I understand there's so many people still that believe that CO2 is somehow destroying the planet because they hear it from such luminaries as Bill Gates. But when you get into the science of it all, yes, the science of it, it's simply untrue. So he covered a huge number of issues. He did a fantastic job. And once again, I think these people have to be sitting there stunned. Now, you remember when he spoke at the UN about German energy a few years ago mm-hmm. and the German contingent laughed at him. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody was laughing. Nobody was laughing when this happened. You know, he was just simply telling them how it is and making it happen. It was awesome. I mean, he really was great.
He knows how to bring the party. Honestly, this is what I voted for. This is exactly what I voted for. And his group that went with him, they were very amused by his speech. And you could see it in their smirks when the camera would look at them.
Yes.
Because I know that they were sitting there going, they cut off his teleprompter? Oh, we're going to be here a while. He's not going to like that very much. And that's exactly what he did. And he took it right to them. He told them to their faces they were destroying their countries.
Yes, he did. Now, there are a couple of things that of course, this administration has been getting hammered on. And, of course, it is in the tariffs, right? These tariffs are supposed to be this disaster for the American economy. But they're not.
Right.
It turns out yesterday they announced that U.S. GDP had been reviewed again for Q2. Now, remember, it was down in quarter one because there was a huge inventory build. Mm-hmm. In the second quarter, U.S. GDP growth hit 3.8%, which is an astonishing number, way out, you know, 0.8 outside any Fed estimate, beyond what was expected by everybody who keeps saying these tariffs are going to slow down the economy.
Yep.
Now, that's not to say we don't have problems in our economy, because we do. We've got employment issues. We've got underemployment issues. We've got inflation that's out of control. Looked at drywall, compared prices on drywall at a Home Depot in Tennessee in 1 year ago and mm-hmm. now, it's up 24.5%.
Yep. Now, there's projects we are literally waiting on because I refuse. I will wait and have unfinished walls before I spend more than I should on drywall and other materials. Mm-hmm. I am that stubborn. I am the most stubborn person
anyone
that's
ever met. Well, there's maybe some value in stubbornness.
No.
But the
I just refuse. You're not going to rob me blind for something I would have paid 25% less for 2 years ago.
A year ago.
Not even. Honestly, though, if you look at pricing from 5 years ago to now, if you look at pricing under Trump to what happened under Biden, and you still believe that this was some marvelous recovery that Biden like prevailed over, you've got some problems, and it's a delusional issue.
Well, the problem is you've been listening to corporate media,
yeah.
and you don't understand the economy. And you haven't been listening to, you know, those conversations we had with E.J. Antoni.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got into all of this and explained it to everyone.
Let's keep E.J. Antoni in our thoughts and prayers. By the way, guys, all of our fans who have enjoyed hearing him on the radio as he proceeds into his confirmation hearing.
That's right. Yeah. So, and that's coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. But here's the point. The tariffs come on, and Jerome Powell is forced to make a statement the other day when they were doing his speech about how inflation is not being driven by tariffs. Now, how is inflation being driven? Well, of course, it's the government printer printing fake money.
Yeah.
But there's another issue. So drywall again, remember, as they have shut down all of these coal-fired power plants, they've also, of course, shut down the scrubbers that clean the air coming out of those coal-fired power plants, which are a source of synthetic gypsum, which goes directly into drywall.
Mm-hmm.
This source of material to make the drywall is gone. So now your electric prices have gone up. And with the money printing and that same policy decision, drywall prices are spiking.
And energy is bananas. We were actually just taking a look at our PICO bill this week comparatively from year over year. And I mean, at least we're consistent. The same months we're using more energy than others. But the cost of energy, I fear, is only going to continue to increase, especially if Pennsylvania decides to stay on the path for another 4 years with Josh Shapiro next year.
Well, and it's not just Shapiro now. Now it's these data centers coming. So what we're in the middle of doing now in Pennsylvania and other states is taking some of the most prime farmland in the world, and we're going to tear it out, and we're going to pave over it to put these jobless, post-apocalyptic data center behemoths up.
Which they sell to us as job producers. Bringing jobs to your community. How dare you be upset?
Yeah, they talk about construction jobs, uh-huh. which, of course, are very temporary. And they're destroying these farmlands. And then they have to, if they're building them in a remote area, they then have to use right of way. They have to build the rights of way to bring in the power, which means they have to use eminent domain to do that, destroying yet more farmland. And the drain on our power system is going to be crazy. Now, in the instances, and I heard one yesterday, where they're also getting tax abatements, now what you're saying is your cost of energy is going to go up 20%, 20%, and 20%. So let's call it 60% in some cases over 3 years it's gone up, right? In places that already been affected.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to pay all the government services that that property used to pay, because that property now goes off the tax rolls, just as if it was purchased by a nonprofit or some other way, off the tax rolls. So the rest of the population has to pick up that tax burden. You get no support from that entity. And once the construction's over, what do you have, 30 jobs, 20 jobs? You know, you're going to have maintenance people. You're going to have some people doing the grounds. You're going to have people that come in from time to time to work on these data centers. These are not job machines. They're big investments in dollars. They also consume huge amounts of water. We haven't yet seen what it's going to do to our water bills. So the data centers, look, they're coming one way or the other. But why are we putting them in places where they don't fit, where there is no infrastructure, where there is no power? And why are we saying that the people that live in homes and apartments and trailer parks, they have to pay the power, water, and government services bill for these data centers? Because the trillion-dollar companies that are building them need tax abatements and will get uninterruptible industrial rate power supply, which will be less than what those homeowners pay.
We have 3 minutes before we have to jump to our first guest today, and I don't want to escape this first half hour without discussing the oh-so-incredible Chester County Human Relations Commission that passed this week by a 2-1 vote. Beth Ann Rosca, who we've had on before, has mentioned this issue. She's actually in a lawsuit with the Human Relations Commission, the PARC, or PAHRC. She's in the midst of a lawsuit against them and how they were formed, I guess, and chartered, I believe. Well, they passed one in Chester County. They're passing these all across the state in different counties. Chester County went a step forward to include immigration status in theirs, which I thought was a really nice touch. However, it is not a protection for illegal immigrants, I did look into. And many people showed up to that meeting. We promoted it ourselves. I would have hoped to have heard more people standing up in opposition to this commission that will be staffed by ideologically driven people who will be making determinations towards businesses and individuals in Chester County based on perceived moments of discrimination. And the coverage for it has been just glowing. Everyone's very excited about this Human Relations Coalition. They used many of the speakers at the event used data to imply that transgender individuals needed extra protections than others because they're at wider risk for violence. And based on the U.S. Census Bureau, as well as the FBI Rochester Institute of Technology, it's 1.3 per 100,000 individuals for trans violence. Women is 2.3 per 100,000. Males are 7.9 per 100,000. So they literally negotiated away the women's rights of Chester County based on an abject lie that transgenders are more at risk physically.
Well, and you got a county commission. So we covered this last night at the town hall in detail. Yep. You've got a county committee or commissioners, depends on where you're at, what they're called. But whatever they're called, they're creating in Delaware and Chester County to start. They're creating effectively courts. So they're writing an ordinance, and then they're creating a court that they will control that will adjudicate any violations of that ordinance. They're going to fund it through the solicitor's office, but there's no actual funding for it. They're pretending these people are going to be volunteers.
Are only going to cost $500
and I'm sure they're going to be
volunteers.
Yeah, sure they're going to be volunteers to start.
Yep.
And so here's the thing. If this commission calls on you and you get hauled in front of it, you now have to defend yourself from claims that may not even be valid. the people that are going to be there are no qualifications to be appointed to this commission. These volunteers, which will clearly be typically friends of the commissioners. So this is undoubtedly an inappropriate use of power they don't have.
Yeah.
And yet they're doing it. And they don't care if it's legal, illegal, constitutional, not constitutional. They don't care if it exceeds their power. The point they're making is we're doing it. And if you don't like it, sue us. But we're going to do it.
Which, might I add, if we find a way, your wish is my command. So we'll see what happens next.
So I want to hit another thing real quick, which is that we learned last night during the town hall that James Comey has been indicted.
Listen, I know everyone's excited about this, but what will a grand jury do? They'll indict a ham sandwich. So, I don't get super excited about grand jury indictments. I've definitely seen them fall apart under the deeper observation of a full trial. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I do not believe he will be the last one, though.
Well, and this isn't just somebody walking down the street. I mean, this is James Comey.
I know.
So for them to go and indict a former director of the FBI for anything, eating a ham sandwich, whatever, right? I mean, you're right. You can get indictments from grand juries. But this is James Comey. This is not a normal person.
I just like to temper my excitement, you know, either in either direction, no matter what the situation is. I temper my anger or my, you know, sadness in situations, but I also temper my excitement in situations because I like to be very level when I'm observing things to try and figure out what is exactly going on and what the truth is.
Well, I think we've got a bit more to learn here, but I'm just, look, it's the first time that a senior government official has actually been, you know, in this route, has been brought to some kind of accountability for what he's done. And remember, what he did in front of everyone. We all knew that he was committing perjury. We all knew that he was leaking documents to the media. These aren't things we had to guess about. We all knew it. So This is a major milestone. And for the Trump administration to step forward and take this action, which I do not believe they would take lightly. These guys aren't Democrats. They would have to have good documentation. They would have to have really good information to make this indictment or they wouldn't do it because they don't want to get embarrassed. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. It's pretty exciting. Now, the other thing that's sort of interesting right now is this, again, we talked about it earlier for a second, but Pete Hegseth calling back these 800. We'll get into this with Darren. But calling back 800 admirals and generals, you know, what is this to be? It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. And a couple of other things. You know, I think we have Scott Perry calling in now. So, you know, this Tylenol defiance, I want to touch on this for a second. So Trump comes out and mentions Tylenol, and now you've got these pregnant mothers saying, I hate Donald Trump more than I love my baby. I'm not asking any questions. I'm going for it. I looked at WebMD, and WebMD came out and said that WebMD came out and said that it is safe for pregnant people to take Tylenol.
That was a good laugh line last night.
It was. I mean, it's just preposterous. And
but
of course,
Tylenol themselves say it's not.
Well, on March 7 of 17, we actually don't recommend using any of our products while pregnant.
Yep.
Thank you for taking the time to voice your concerns today. That was from Tylenol
on
their account on X on March 7 of 2017. And you know, this is posted next to a doctor, a female pregnant doctor, or I guess you'd call her a pregnant person because she's obviously ideological. A pregnant person who happens to be a doctor who may or may not be female, who is popping Tylenol to show defiance to Donald Trump. These people are unhinged. This is silliness.
Yeah.
I mean, and if in
it's
the not, end,
it's actually worse than silliness, actually. I think there's something really seriously mentally ill and wrong with this group of people to be willing to do that to their child.